Welcome to the Got Your Six podcast. This podcast brings together current service members and veteran high performers to share their methods, strategies, and ideas delivered in an informative and, most importantly, actionable way that'll help you lead yourself and those around you from the battlefield to the boardroom. Coming to you every episode, I'm your host, Tony Nash, and into the breach.
Nothing mentioned on this podcast is an endorsement or opinion of the Department of Defense.
I got your six, we got your back. Got your six, we got your back. Got your six, we got your back. I got your six.
Sixers, what an unbelievable treat we have today. The Chief Executive Officer of Service to School. You've seen her probably everywhere, right? She's on strong leader list. She is absolutely crushing it and continues to give back to veterans and through the incredible work over at Service to School. Christine Schwartz, thank you so much for coming on the Got Your Six podcast. Honored to have you here.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me, Tony. I'm excited to be here. And I love your enthusiasm. I'm pumped up.
Yeah. You're only going to get me at one level, 11. But as you have transitioned out and you continue to help people, you know, get into different schools, before we go any further, what is Service to School?
So Service to School, we are a veteran service organization. We're a 501c3, so we are a nonprofit. But our goal is to help veterans get into the best schools possible. That's the bottom line. We want really our main focus is on enlisted veterans. We want to make sure that enlisted veterans are making the most informed decisions about their higher education, that they're using their GI Bill at a school that's really going to set them up for future success. You know, it's all over the news, people being taken advantage of for that GI Bill, going to schools where maybe they're not getting the best degrees or having the best outcomes. And we want to make sure that veterans are going to top colleges, good colleges, so that they can graduate and get good jobs and have successful futures because they served our nation and that's what they deserve.
And continuing to, you know, take the time to help them out along the ways, because when it comes to filling out an application, you really kind of have to peel back the onion on so many different layers and allow someone to just be themselves, because a lot of it, and we're going to probably talk throughout the episode, that's skill transfer, where people think, oh, I was this while I was in service, so I need to be this out of service, and completely undervaluing that soft skill that applies in so many different areas.
Yes. Well, and that's the great thing about higher education is you don't have to be whatever you were in the military. It's actually a time to reinvent yourself. You were an infantryman. Okay, well, you can go to college and be an English major. Like, the sky's the limit. Do what you want. Gain a new skill set. But I guess the hard thing about applying to college is it's not just the application. It is and it isn't. It's selecting a school, finding something that aligns with where you want to go in the future. Do you want to go to a small liberal arts college? Do you want to go to a large research university? There's so many facets. And I think people forget, you know, high schoolers have high school guidance counselors. They have access to people that can help them identify colleges and then help them with the application. Veterans don't have that. Transitioning service members don't have that. And we really fill that gap. 60% of veterans are first generation college students. So that means they're the first person in their family to go to college. And so there's just a huge knowledge gap on how to apply and where to apply. And we help bridge that gap and make sure that you're aligning yourself with really great opportunities.
How do you help people separate, like, all right, I want to go get my bachelor's degree, or even I want to go get my master's degree, and not get fixated so much on a name when it comes to a school, but more of what the school offers for that individual student? How do you help separate the two?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody has a tendency to get fixated on a name, right? Like, people
we'll
wear
call it target fixation. Yeah.
Yeah, we wear name brand clothing. We want to go to Princeton or we want to go to Harvard. But that's a huge thing that Service to School does, is try and really understand what it is that you want to do and how a school might align with that and how a school like culturally aligns with your preferences, geographically aligns with your preferences, and then opens up kind of this world to, yeah, it's not just about the Harvards, the Yales, the Princetons. Like, there's hundreds of wonderful colleges across this country, and there's probably a really great choice for you. We just need to understand your goals and like who you are as a person, and then we can make that match.
If you had to narrow it down to like one question that most times will give you the most direct way to help somebody figure out what that is, what does that look like? Or how is it asked in a way for somebody to be like, this is actually what I want, as opposed to like running a race that I probably don't care about.
Well, and you know what? I don't work one-on-one with our veterans anymore. Yeah. And we have professional college advisors that are amazing. And this is what they're so skilled at. But a lot of times what people come to us and say is they're like, I want to go to a good college. And we say, well, what does a good college look like to you? So it's subjective in that sense. So again, just trying to get to the bottom of what somebody wants out of that college experience or out of that degree, and then aligning it correctly.
How do you, as a CEO, how has that helped from your time in service, allowed you to manage this wonderful organization and the incredible people and humans that you interact with on a daily basis? Is there like one thing you go to consistently? You're like, yep, this has helped me more times than I give it credit for.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, I was an Army officer. I know you're an Army officer. I think each branch of service has a different culture. And I've really seen that over the past couple of years because we work with so many people from different branches. When I was in the Army, you know, I really understood the Army. But I think more than anything, the Army is about, it's a people organization. Sure, we fight wars and we do these things, but what we do is we take care of each other and we manage people and we manage up and we manage down and we manage across. So, I mean, I think that if anything I learned from the Army, it was just how to take care of people and how to be a listener, how to see things, how to pick up on cues, you know, like clearly somebody's not doing well at work. Okay, well, what's going on at home? What's going on here, there, and the other? It's not all about work. And I think that's what the Army does well, is teach you to pick up on those things. You know, you're always like thinking about how you take care of your soldiers. And I bring that to work with me every day. I'm like, how do I take care of my staff? Therefore, my staff can take care of all of the veterans that we serve. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's empathy, it's caring, and taking care of people at the end of the day. And that's what I love. That's what I love to do.
Have you always had that empathy? Obviously, like, you don't just walk into the Army and they're like, oh, here's some empathy. Here's a little bit of like active listening.
Yeah, I've always been like, I've always known I want to work with people and I want to take care of people. I've always known that. Like, I have three kids. I love being a mom. That's my favorite thing in the world. And I knew in college, even, I was like, whatever I do, I have to work with a lot of people and other people. So, you know, Christine shouldn't be an architect. That wouldn't be the thing for me. And I'm an extrovert. Like, that's what gives me energy, being around people. So, yeah, I've always known that.
Is there an instance that you can kind of dial it back to, like in the Army, where you realized that you had this like gift of empathy and active listening? And I know that sounds like we're just kind of pulling jargon, like a lot of jargon out at one time, but is you were like, I was just myself and it helped and benefited not only the organization, but you to be a better leader.
I mean, I honestly think I've always kind of like been, you know, kind of put in these leadership positions since I was a kid. And I actually, when you talk to a lot of leaders, they were athletes or they were, you know, presidents of the student council, whatever it might be. Like, I was an athlete. I was a swimmer growing up. And I was captain of my swim team my senior year, but I was like the second captain from my sophomore year on. And it was just because I think I had a way to like bring the team together. I was goofy in the locker room. Like, we did things. Like, I always wanted people to be having fun and getting excited and being their cheerleader. So, I mean, I think it goes back to those days of just wanting to like get a group together and get them excited and get them rowing in the same direction. Like, I was very aware, like, hey, if everybody on the swim team is excited about winning, then they're going to want to win. So how do we get them excited about it? And I mean, I also don't think I was like the best leader in the Army. I mean, I think I did a lot of growing up. I think I made good decisions, bad decisions, but I loved being a platoon leader. I loved being an XO and bouncing around all the little the platoons and checking on them and doing all that. Like, I was a very good company level officer. I don't know that I would thrive, you know, as like a major and beyond.
I think personally, you would. I can tell you that right off the jump. How do you get the team excited about winning now? Because it's a little bit of a different, you're not competing as an athlete, but you are being successful in a different arena, more or less.
I mean, I think in a workplace, and Service to School is a pretty small organization as far as our full-time staff. But I think that it's so important who you hire and who is on your team. And when you see either somebody bringing down the team, or like if you have a toxic leader, like those things need to be addressed in quickly, because things can just implode so quickly if the right person's not in charge, or if a team isn't, you know, the team isn't jiving. And in the same sense, if that is happening, if you're like, hey, I see that the team's not working together, that doesn't mean that people on the team are necessarily bad. It just means like they shouldn't be working together. So you have to take a step back and be like, I'm going to move this person here and move this person here because they work better together, or their skill sets work better together, or they have a communication style that each other understands. I think I try to be pretty positive at work. So we're having a team call. I'm always trying to be more upbeat. I think it's very important to be like, hey, I'm not having a great day. My kid has a fever. I have to pick him up early from school. This is annoying. Like, that's fine. But I do think it goes a long way to have like a positive spirit in the workplace, because people latch on to that. And then that's, you know, that's what they give back to. You know, if you're happy, people are happy. So bring in some happiness, some joy, some humor, all of that. That's fun. And then, you know, the open door policy of the Army. I don't know if that's really true, but I truly believe in a flat organization. I'm like, hey, come to me with whatever. We'll talk about it. I'm a huge Zoom person. Like, I'm not going to call you on the phone. Let's jump on Zoom. I want to see your facial reactions. I want to see your body language. Let's talk. Let's work it out.
How do you have those hard conversations when you do need to kind of either remove someone from a particular environment or move on from them altogether? How do you have those conversations?
I think that giving negative feedback is one of the hardest things to do as a leader, to be honest. And that's like something that I'm working on, and I'm still working on, and I'm still trying to figure out. I think, again, having these open door policies and having multiple conversations, like if you don't like the direction of something, you can't just hold it in for 6 months and then be like, hey, by the way, you're not up to standard. Your work stinks. Like, these should be conversations that that are ongoing. You should give people the opportunity to, if it's an issue, to address the issue, to fix the issue. And then you should also say, again, have an understanding of whatever their normal output. Like, say it's gotten really bad. Like, they used to do 100 reports a week and now they're doing 90 reports, whatever. Okay, well, maybe something changed in their personal life and they have something going on. So have that understanding. But I think, again, it's like constant communication. And I think the worst thing that you can do is like surprise somebody.
Yeah, because when you do that, people automatically go into defense, right? They're going to put their fist up and then they're going to be looking for a fight. I love how you said that you're constantly working on how do you provide negative feedback. What has been successful for you as you continue to figure out your style and able to meet people with maybe not the best news, but like constructive criticism?
So I have this thing that I try to remember, which is positive, negative, positive. So if you want to give bad feedback or negative feedback, you start with positive, you give the negative, you reinforce with positive. And I think that's like a well-known thing, but I'm not sure. So I always, and this can be, it could be written, that can be verbal, but always, I would always say, hey, like, you're doing this really well. Here's what I noticed needed more effort, or here's some things that didn't sit well with me. And then in the conversation on a positive note, and then always, again, ask for that person's opinion. Like, I never personally would want to get feedback and then my boss be like, okay, see you later. I want to give feedback and then I'll be like, so Tony, do you feel the same way? Do you think I'm off my mark? And let that person speak, because that could be very enlightening. I've gone into feedback conversations thinking like, okay, this is going to be 20 minutes and it's an hour and a half because I've then given that person the opportunity to give an explanation.
Yeah, because you don't want to, it's not like a quick, like a drive-through, right? You come in, hi, I'd like you to keep doing this, absolutely remove this thing. And then can we finish with, you know, like positivity on the way out? Like you said,
right, and then peace out.
Yeah. Right. And you're engaged the entire time. You don't have like, you're not checking your phone. Like, cause that show, like you said, you like to do Zoom and see people's body language so you can help relate to whatever they're going through. That's massive.
And too, again, like Slack, you know, there's not, everybody can talk to people all day. Slack, things don't come across correctly on Slack. You can put a nice emoji in, but you know, it still might not seem that nice. So follow up too. Like if I send something on Slack and I'm like, that probably came across kind of harsh, I'm not going to follow up and be like, sorry if that came off harsh. And I think that like, especially for female leaders, like don't apologize for giving direction, but then just check back and be like, hey, was what I said, did you understand what I was trying to say? Do you understand what I was getting at? Okay, cool.
You mentioned like as a female leader, like you feel like sometimes you have to like instantly apologize coming off the gate. How do you navigate that as a CEO?
We could ask lots of women this. Well, you know, luckily, most people on my staff are female. So I think we do kind of understand each other. But I mean, I've been told my whole career, like, Christine, that came off as aggressive, or you don't look friendly, or whatever. And I really do not let it get to me. I don't. Because I'm like, you know what? Nobody in the world would say this to a man. If you want to say to, like, that's your own problem. Then.
Right. That's yeah. That's problem. On the individual. Absolutely. Yeah,
like, go to therapy and figure out why you need to say that to a woman.
Sometimes people just say things. It's like, why are you telling me this? Would you say that to Steve?
And I mean, I think anybody, like I can say things. I think like aggression though, sometimes is like, that's like a tone of voice thing. And I don't mean to be, but again, like if it comes off like that.
Being with your athletic background too, like both being an athlete and, you know, a coach, as you've kind of coached a long way, being a team captain, right? Bringing the team to where you want to take them. You're understanding everybody differently where they're at. So you've also had to like look internally and see where you're at. As you've done that, you've probably had to review, you know, potential failures as well as successes along the way. Has there been like a, just an absolute massive failure that led to success later on down the road?
Yeah. Well, and I kind of actually do want to go back to the if somebody said something to me, I wouldn't feel bad about it. I'd be like, well, whatever. But I will get in my own head if I feel like I hurt somebody's feelings. So again, like if I say something at work, even though on Slack, I'll be like, oh, I don't need to go back and apologize. And I probably won't, but I will sit there or I'll be in bed at night and I'll be like, ooh, I hope that didn't come off wrong. And I'm just like, so I do harp on these things, but to the point of, yeah, like major failures.
How do you stop yourself from spinning?
I'll be like, Christine, you got to let it go. You got,
that's hard.
Self-talk. You got to move on. You got to move on. Again, those are things I'm working on, and it's like weird. I feel like as I've gotten older, I'll harp on things for even longer now or feel worse about them. But I think you just, yeah, you have to say, okay, let go. What's done is done. Okay, let's turn the page, move on.
Do you physically like turn a page? I know some people, like you said, you have self-talk and you say, hey, we got to move on. Is there anything else that as you've kind of started to do that and be more in tune with yourself that you've realized like, this is kind of the process that I go through?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like there's certain people I'll talk to if something's really bothering me, like if it's one of my sisters or my husband, about different, and it, you know, different subjects I'll talk to different people about. But I think doing that and then getting their feedback, which is oftentimes like, I don't think that's as big of a deal as you think it is. And then I can let it go. Or on the occasion, they're like, yeah, I'm kind of not cool, then I can go back and reflect further and be like, okay, let's actually fix this. So that really helps. I don't know. I feel like all of us millennials are in spirals these last couple of years of just like, what's going on? Who am I? Am I a good person? And am I a bad person? what's happening in the world. But yeah, finding outlets for everything, if that's work stress, if it's life stress, whatever it might be, finding your outlets, finding your people, and having your little community that can make you comfortable.
And that's absolutely massive, right? Because along the way, like you said, you will fail. And so as we talk about failure, right, let's go back to the question of where did you fail massively?
I feel like I've failed massively lots of times. So, okay, when I got out of the Army, I would say like this is where my massive failures came in. When I got out of the Army, I could not find a good job. And this was in 2014, early 2014. And I just like, I didn't know what I was doing. All the programs that are out there nowadays, these were not things. Like LinkedIn was barely a thing in 2014. And so I was going off this resume that TAPS told me was good, or ACAP told me it was good. I just had no idea about any industries. I told Brennan Aronson the story. I was like, I applied to a job at I think it was at Deloitte, on a contract where I'd work for Salesforce, like being a Salesforce consultant, like to Salesforce. And I didn't even know what Salesforce was. I was like, oh, they want to build a Salesforce? I know what sales are. I can be a part of their Salesforce. Like, just had no understanding of anything.
Yeah. Shout out to Brendan, by the way. Friend of the show.
Yes. Brendan's awesome. Full of knowledge. But I was just, you know, applying to any job. And I think, first of all, my resume sucked, because I didn't know how to write it. And then I have a degree from Virginia Tech, but it's in it's a business degree, but it's in hospitality. And then I was a logistics officer in the Army. And then I like did a deployment where I did transportation stuff. I think people got it and we were like, so this person can run a restaurant according to their college degree.
They can run the restaurant and the supply chain into it, as well as making sure our HR department is square.
Right. I had no idea. So I couldn't find a job. And it was super defeating, because everything they tell you in the Army is like, oh, you're a rock star. You're going to find a job. You're going to go make $100,000 and manage people. And that was not the case. So that was enlightening. And it was stressful. So it was like a really kind of stressful period of my life trying to get my footing on finding a good job. So yeah, I think I failed in just probably being overconfident in what the Army had fed me, that I could find a job, and then just not taking the time to understand different industries, taking the time to understand what grad school could have done for me. Like, I should have gone to grad school at that time, but I didn't. So I just made a lot of decisions that weren't great, but they led me to where I am today. So I'm also like, well, no regrets.
What helped you like kind of stop spiraling and like then start to research? It was just getting that momentum of like hearing no, or like, this isn't where I want to go, and then figuring out that way?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like keep it in, you know. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm a failure and I'm going to tell anyone. Like, I was very open with my friends and with other people that I knew had good jobs. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Clearly I'm not doing this right. Please help me. And I had a good friend who's an Army spouse, and she helped me fix my resume. She helped introduce me to a bunch of people, and really get my first job after the Army. And I was a technology recruiter. And so, yeah, I think it was just not being embarrassed in a way, like that I had failed, and just getting out there and asking for help.
Yeah. Seeking feedback is absolutely massive. We could keep going and going, and I want to, but I also want to make sure we get this last question in. How are you better today than yesterday?
Well, I went for a run today. So I'm better because I have been like emotionally zen all day, in an upbeat spirit. But yeah, a little bit better every day. I did something to make myself happy, and it made my whole day better. And everybody around me, I think, was better today because I was in a good mood.
Christine, where can people go to find more about you and especially service to school?
So they should definitely, everybody that is in the military or getting out should consider higher education as the first step in their transition. So if you're thinking about a job, think about higher education first, because it's going to help you get a really good job. And they should go to servicetoschool.org, and it's service2school.org, or follow us on social media. We post a lot of great stuff on social media. And then as far as learning about me, I don't think you really want to do that. But I mean, I have a LinkedIn profile, so find me there. If anybody has questions, always happy to help however I can. So connect with me and I'll see what I can do.
And we'll make sure we link all that in the show notes below so people can just go one click and boom, there they are. Christine, thank you so much for sharing your methods, your strategies, your tactics, and most importantly, thanks for having our six. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tony. Have a good one.
Hey, Sixers, did you know the Got Your Six podcast is now streaming every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern on Wreaths Across America Radio, available on the iHeartRadio app, the Audacity app, and the TuneIn app. Just search the word Wreath. You got something out of this? Be a battle buddy. Share with a friend, pass it along. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you leave us a review and give us as many stars as you think we warrant, because we love what we do here at the Got Your Six podcast. We're always adapting and evolving this podcast because of you, the Sixers. And if you're listening on Spotify, hit that follow button. You'll never miss an episode when we drop new ones every Monday.
I don't know what you've been told, Sixers, but the lawyers would like us to remind you that the views, opinions, and comments expressed on the Got Your Six podcast are solely those of the hosts or guests, to include current and previous Department of Defense employees, and should in no way be considered the opinions of or endorsements on behalf of the Department of Defense or any of its components, divisions, contractors, or other current and previous staff members.